Okay, I'm sorry this was a problem. I guess I should have done put the different things there like I did for the example. And I used the name calling for an example because I thought that might be something nobody would think of. And the reason I thought of it was because are you ever in the car and somebody pulls in front of you, cuts you off, and you say, you jerk, or something else?
Never.
That's a guy thing, isn't it?
Yes.
Anyway, because you have this one specifically, we'll talk about this one first. So, did anybody come up with a Bible example of somebody calling somebody a name?
Stupid.
In the Bible?
Oh, I'm sorry. The Bible.
Like, whoa. I don't think anybody called him stupid.
I'm sorry.
I wanted a Bible example first. We'll get to stupid in a minute. Anybody have one?
So I just, you know, Pharisees and Sadducees were called brood vipers.
Brood vipers? Okay, who called them that?
I don't know. I have to look.
John the Baptist called them that. Which, one of my examples is when Paul called the high priest Annas? Was it Annas? Whitewashed
yes.
wall. Mm-hmm. That one to me, I feel like because those are somewhat inspired people, that they were probably justified in what they were doing, and there was a reason for what they were doing. I did put that down. Is this one okay? I don't know that it's okay for any of us to go around and call somebody a brood of vipers or a whitewashed wall. Although brood of vipers, well, it's calling them a name. You know, I don't know. What do y'all think of that? Before we move on to the one that's
I agree. These are inspired writers.
Right.
I think
well, they're not writing when they do that. They say it.
No, but I think that they are inspired.
There's a reason. What did Jesus call? He called the people who ran out of the temple the den of thieves. No, my father's house is not. You've made my father's house a den of thieves. I don't guess he called them a name. But anyway, I think that's a little different from us getting irritated with somebody and calling them stupid. The Bible example I came up with is in 2 Kings 2, when the prophet Elisha was just walking along, wasn't even doing anything, and a bunch of kids. Young boys, or youths, it says, I assume they're boys, came up from the city and mocked him and said, go up, you bald head, go up, you bald head. What happened to him? It was a little bit sudden, a little bit like Ananias and Sapphira. What happened to them? Anybody remember? Elisha turned around and looked at him and pronounced a curse on him in the name of the Lord. Remember that? And two female bears came out of the woods and mauled 42 of the youths. Now, if we call somebody stupid or a jerk or something, obviously bears aren't going to come out of the woods and maul us. But my whole point here is maybe we need to stop and think before we come out. Well, I'm particularly bad about calling people idiots. Now,
ride with Evan for a while because he would call them idiots too. You know,
but where has he heard that?
He's heard it from me. That's okay. The easiest way to break your habit. I will loan you Evan.
Well, I have a 7-year-old grandson, too, who, if stupid comes out of my mouth, he is very quick. We don't say that, Granny. So, you know, it is good to have a little kid around, but because if you teach them right, then they can correct you if you slip. Although, you know, his parents are, I'm sure, teaching him not to do that. And I did my kids, too. I didn't let them call people stupid or even tell people to shut up. But.
Well, now and then, you know, remember
they
asked, he said, foolish Galatians. I mean, sometimes foolish is used.
I think that's probably in the other category, though. That's somebody who's inspired and who is teaching them and trying to get them to see that what they're doing is way out of line. I'm looking at is an attitude that we might have when we're calling people names because we're irritated with them or mad at them. Or
and sometimes you don't even have to call them a name. I mean,
yeah,
Dylan,
you just think.
Well, Dylan busted me, you know, driving. Same thing. And it was the attitude behind it that stabs you. Because I had a really bad habit of saying, go, woman! Because they weren't going fast enough. And then at a red light, you hear this little 2-year-old voice behind you saying, go, woman!
It's like, oh. Yeah, or you idiot.
Yeah.
I think, and I don't always remember to do this, but I try to. If, you know, I try to let somebody go in front of me. I always feel so much better when they wave thank you than I do when I say, you idiot, get out of my way. So I don't know why I can't remember, you know, that it's a better feeling if you think nice, pleasant thoughts and let the big shot get in front of you or somebody who's in a big hurry or not being such a big hurry or whatever. What did you have thoughts on the stupid thing, Sheila?
No, I just...
We're all used to saying
that. You know, we use a lot that we shouldn't.
Yeah.
And it's used, it's related to other people. I mean, you know, she's stupid.
I doubt anybody here is guilty of calling people, of cursing people, which is another thing I have down that we're going to talk about in a minute. But I did want us to see that I think this is something that's really easy for us to fall into this trap of not being quite in charge of our mouths getting ahead of our brains.
Isn't this from the 2 Kings
2:23. And I read the next verse too, which is where it tells what happened to them when the bears came out and mauled them.
This is perfect. Is that what I No.
Yeah, but see, that's that kind of is in the line of you brood of vipers and you whitewash wall.
Why did 2 Kings fall in that same category?
The kids calling Elisha bald head?
I know, but I mean, well, I guess, okay, I see. But
they were punished. He cursed them. Yeah, I think that's different than these kids are just being smart alecks. I'm talking about kids, not Elisha.
I had a couple of examples that were sort of in line with what Don said about the attitude behind it. Joseph's brothers called him a dreamer. And he did have dreams. I guess he was a dreamer, but they didn't mean it in a positive way.
No,
they did it as you know, name calling. Or when Jesus was crucified, they were mocking him by calling him the king of the Jews. Well, yeah, he was the king of the Jews, but they meant it in a mocking way.
Yeah, they didn't mean it nice.
Right.
Oh,
so I consider those both name calling.
Okay, I agree.
Also thought of Korah and his men that told Moses, we can do this as good as you can. And the earth opened up and swallowed.
Yeah, I have that. I used Korah down here somewhere else.
Everybody, I didn't choose Korah.
It was in this lesson because I...
You wanted Korah, you cheated. I was in Korah.
Yeah, well, somewhere because I remember writing it down. I remember studying it. Well, anyway, I have it down under whining and complaining because they didn't like it that Moses was in charge. Okay.
Well, see, maybe he didn't actually call him a name about what they said.
Korah. I know, but I don't want to talk about Korah right now. That's not under this topic. But we're going to talk about him in a minute.
Look what Paul did to the 6 out of 7 churches, but this was different. This was constructed.
Yes.
You could have
yes.
Constructive or
and inspired. And inspired. Yeah. Constructive criticism. Yeah, that's another thing that we're going to look at down here, too. Okay, but let's move on from name-calling. What other one? Did anybody get another one at all? Another critical type of speech?
What about just words that are just generally discouraging?
Mm-hmm.
Like Job's wife.
Okay.
Curse God and die.
Well, I put her under cursing and profanity because she wanted to curse God. I don't guess she specifically did, but I think that discouraging is a good one. Excellent. Anybody else have any other examples for that one?
Numbers 12, she was criticizing Moses, but it was, what I understand from reading the story is that was kind of an excuse. Her real problem was she was jealous of the power that Moses had.
Okay. That's probably why I had Korah down on the whining and complaining, because they didn't like the fact that they weren't in charge. He and his merry men weren't happy about the fact that somebody was in charge. They didn't like the way things were going, and who appointed you, you know, top dog, that kind of thing. Anything else under discouraging? I wish I thought of that one.
Well, you had Miss Mary and Mary
Martha.
Complaining about her sitting there.
Yes, that is a good one. But we're going to talk about her under whining. In fact, let's just talk about whining since we're kind of talking about it anyway. That was one of my topics.
False accusations are hurtful.
Ma'am?
False accusations are hurtful.
Yes, I have that under slander. Let me just tell you what I had. I had cursing or profanity, hypercritical judgment, you know, if you're all over somebody when you're guilty of the same, whining and complaining and slander. Those were the topics I had. Mm-hmm. So, does anybody have anything other than discouraging speech that we need to look at, and then we'll just start with one and go down the list?
One that I found, and there are two verses that I found that talk about backbiting, which really is more of a talking behind somebody's back to hurt them. It's something you're doing that they maybe even know about. But hurting people, saying things that hurt people,
that they never know about you. They may think you're their best friend, but you're doing right behind their back.
And that's usually malicious. That's not just passing on a story because you want to be the first to tell it, which is gossip. And I have that later on in another lesson. But it, yeah, it's interesting. I think that is a good one. Because if you're not, the whole purpose of that is to hurt somebody, along as well as slander. And the ones that I had, when I first studied this, that I put under slander, I decided not to use because they were specifically backbiting, and I didn't think that fit under slander because it has a whole different intent. Well, I don't know. I don't guess it does. The slander is malicious as well. Who else? Does anybody else have a biblical example of somebody that was guilty of slander or backbiting?
Well, I thought Potiphar was like, she just out and out slandered Joseph. She knows something that is totally
untrue. Completely untrue. And her and we're talking about Joseph's wife. Potiphar's wife slandering Joseph. And she did it on purpose to hurt him, and it did hurt him. He ended up in prison, didn't he? Anybody else? What about Haman and Esther? Who did he slander?
Whole nation.
The entire Jewish nation. He said, these people aren't doing, obeying your laws, and I think you need to just wipe them out. And he had an agenda, didn't he? It wasn't because he just didn't like one person. It was actually because he didn't like one person. He didn't like Mordecai, but he just thought, he'd take care of his whole problem.
And you had the men that tried to catch Daniel.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sure did. And they set it up to where they could catch him, didn't they? They actually set up had the king make a law to make them get caught.
Actually, what they told about Daniel was true.
That's true.
That he prayed no matter what. They had to make the law before they did.
Oh, that's right.
I mean,
they just didn't like him doing it, so they kind of went behind to catch him.
And they knew that the king honor Daniel, and Daniel had a lot of power, and they were trying to, they didn't like that.
When they went to the king to tell him what Daniel was doing, what was the king's reaction?
He was upset because he liked Daniel.
He did. He did not want to destroy him. Wasn't a very bright king, was he?
And I don't know if backbiting slander is always lying about him or anything. I think it can also be, if it's to reach an end that will hurt them,
they might tell something that they might not necessarily want known.
Right.
It'll cause harm.
Yeah, it seems like you have the same intent, so it's kind of along the same line.
Okay. Let's look at Psalm 101, verse 5. Sandra, would you read that when you get there, please?
Whoever secretly slanders his neighbor, him I will destroy. The one who has a haughty look and a proud heart, him I will not endure.
So who? Where does slander lead? What does it accomplish for yourself? It leads to destruction. God doesn't like it, and this isn't the only verse. Titus 2:3, when it's talking about older men, older women, younger men, younger women. The older women are specifically told not to be slanderers. And, I think it's telling that it's mentioned there because, it's not just saying be good women and, leaders for the younger and examples and that kind of thing. It specifically mentions slander, among other things, to make sure that you're not a slanderer. Anybody else have anything that they want to say on slander? Okay, how about whining and complaining? Somebody already mentioned Martha when she was upset that Mary wasn't helping her. Martha was upset that Mary wasn't helping her serve, and what was Mary doing?
Nothing.
Sitting at Jesus' feet, yes, listening to the teaching.
Yes.
And she was corrected. You need to think about what's important here. But any other examples?
Well, the one you've got here,
Yeah, we'll talk about them in a minute. Let's look at other ones. Sandra?
I had in John 12, when Mary was, she used that expensive oil and she was washing Jesus' feet. And Judas he just had a fit. And the scripture says he'd already been stealing from her money bag. But he was complaining to Jesus because she had wasted, in his mind, had wasted this expensive oil washing somebody's feet.
That really could come under hypercritical judgment too, because he was complaining about her when he was guilty of the same thing. Somebody I put was in Matthew 20. It's one of the parables where there's a vineyard and some people have been working there a long time, and then some kind of new hires, you know, come in, and they all get the same reward. They all get the same pay at the end of the day. And the guys that have been there longer are complaining because the new guys got as much as they did. What is this referring to? What's Jesus talking about here?
Salvation.
Right. For people who are maybe saved later in their life, or, you know, don't have as many years of service or whatever. And they were griping because, you know, they didn't think it was fair for the other guys. But, you know, when Jesus puts things in perspective like that, it makes a difference, doesn't it?
How about the older?
That was Matthew 20, verse 11.
How about the older brother and the prodigal son?
Good one. He just didn't get it, did he? I also put Jonah. After he ran away from God, ended up in the fish's mouth, and learned his lesson, and he went on and did what God told him to do, and they repented. What did he have the gall to do?
How dare you save them?
Yeah.
So I just kind of
pouted, basically. Yeah, I can't believe God didn't zap him. I just thought.
I kind of heard a humorous story on that. There was someone explaining to a young child the whole story, and then they said, "So who do you think was most disappointed that the brother came back?" And the kid sat there and thought of it and said, "The fatted calf."
Okay, I also put Korah under this one because they weren't the leaders. They didn't like it, you know. Have y'all ever seen that before? Somebody who's not in charge. I've seen that in PTA. You know, somebody doesn't like what the president's doing, so they mount up some big campaign and fuss about it, find out.
But they don't want to be the president either.
Well, sometimes they do. Sometimes they do. Sometimes they don't. You're right. They just want to gripe.
I think Christians can be very guilty of that. They don't like what the elders are doing. They're raising a big stink about it. Talk about it.
That's right.
We'll talk to the elders about it.
But they'll talk to everybody else.
They won't talk to everybody else and
they
about it.
Well, you know what? Even if, just take it down a notch to like a one-on-one thing. So you've got a problem with another person. And we're going to look at this on another question, too, about how to deal with if somebody's done you wrong. But if, say, you have a problem with another person, is the right way to do that go telling everybody about it? No, you've got to go to that person. And we'll look at that in more detail.
On more than one occasion, Lauren, we've known the preachers that got ran off because some women didn't like him, and they would get on the phone and talk and talk and, you know, get their husbands all stirred up about stuff, and he's gone. Even 6 months, maybe. But
I just cannot even imagine a woman having that much power. I can't.
Maybe.
Either that or. Well, I know it happens. I'm not denying it happens.
It doesn't always have to be women. Sometimes one man can get. Crossways with
right.
Preacher,
but I know you're right. Women can do it too.
But yeah, we've heard several preachers say, "Well, what is it? The congregation got tired of me, so I'm going now." Or sometimes just one woman, you know, just she
mounts a campaign.
He preaches something she disagrees with or doesn't like, or just, you know, people say, "Well, I just want to change." You know, they just that's their easy way to get out of it, but. They really won't deal with, why do you think you need to change? What needs to be changed? Is he preaching something that's not true? No, we just need to change. And so they don't want to deal with Matthew, you know.
Yeah. A lot of people don't want to deal with anything.
Well, a lot of times it's them that needs to be dealt with, and so they're trying to get rid of the one they think is going to deal with them. Whether it be the elders, sometimes we turn to the elders. You know, people get crossways with the elders, and can give the elders so much grief that finally one will just resign. You know, he's just tired of fighting. He shouldn't do that, but, you know, they're human, and they get tired after a while. And if the congregation's not following them, you know, they can't browbeat them and make them do what's right. And so we need to be, you know, thinking that this can be on a spiritual level a real big time if we're not careful.
Well, and you also have to be careful of it getting to the younger generation, because if it's not caught, then they can start influencing the younger's attitude, like the kids' attitudes towards the authority. And it ends up escalating.
If kids grow up and see that the women are in charge, you know, what ideas do they give them? And the same thing if, you know, they think they can undermine somebody, if they learn how to undermine and manipulate situations. Do what?
They learn to disrespect.
Right, yes, they do. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 10:10. I just thought this was interesting because, Lisa, would you read that, please?
Nor grumble as some of them did and were destroyed by the destroyer.
Okay, actually, I should have had you read some more, but if you back up a little bit, this whole chapter is, it's talking about the Old Testament people being examples. And then, starting in verse 7, it says, do not become idolaters, as were some of them. Verse 8 says, nor let us commit sexual immorality, as some of them did. Nor let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. Verse 10, nor complain, as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. It was interesting to me that complaining was in a list with idolatry, sexual immorality, and tempting Christ. You know, I think we sometimes fall into the trap of, some sins aren't quite so bad as others, or, that was just a little thing, that's not that big a deal, I know God will forgive me that, but when you think about it in comparison to the other things it's in a list with, we need to, remember that. As far as, sometimes we just complain in our heads, or our hearts, sometimes it doesn't get out, and sometimes, maybe that we need that to work through a problem or something, but when we get into trouble is when we start voicing our complaints and our dissatisfaction with situations or people or whatever, unless it's in a constructive way. If we see sin, that's different. But just because we don't like something, that's not the best. Philippians 2:14, does anybody know what that says? That one says,
do all things without grumbling or disputing.
Yeah. And then in Ecclesiastes 7:10, y'all don't have to call there, turn there, but let me read this to you. This just popped into my head, and this verse kind of went with it. It says, do not say, why were the former days better than these? For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. To me, this is like, the grass is always greener on the other side. Sometimes we think, if I just had this, or if I just had that, or if this were to change, or whatever. And, when that happens, what's often the case? It's not a better situation. You just think, if I had a new house, or if I could move to another town, or if I were in a different church, or if my kids had different friends, or, my kids would do this. Sometimes what we think we want is not always the best, or it's not even what we thought we wanted. And so we need to be careful when we're analyzing the situation and thinking it's not so great, maybe realize that, maybe we ought to focus on what is good about our lives or our situation and quit worrying about what's not exactly like we want it. Is anybody ever going to get everything like they exactly want it? I think I thought that when I was young. I thought, when such and such happens, then such and such, and it just really never does quite work out exactly like the plan, does it?
What chapter and verse was that?
That was Ecclesiastes 7:10.
Thank you.
Well, I kind of heard it put a good way. If you had everything, where would you put it all?
That's a good point. And, if you had everything, how could you deal with it all? There's not always time for
it. How many times have we prayed for something and asked for something and grumbled and complained because we didn't have something, and then we got it and we thought, this wasn't right.
Yeah.
This wasn't how it
planned. I always think about the swans. They prayed so hard for Jason to be healed, and he wasn't. And now, that's not the right example.
They
prayed for him to live. That was what it was. And then he's not in a. This is a young boy was in a bad car wreck, and he did live, but he is pretty close to helpless. And he doesn't do anything for himself. Okay, let's talk about cursing and profanity. And this, I put Job's wife here because she didn't exactly say it. But when you tell somebody to curse God, to me that's kind of the same thing. Anybody else in the Bible curse?
Well, I don't know if it's cursing that the Pharisees called Christ or the Beelzebub.
Wow. Well, that might be interesting.
I don't know if it's the servant of Beelzebub. It was.
Yeah.
They were saying that he was his servant. I think it was the Pharisees. Either Pharisees or
the Sadducees. Okay. Any other examples? What about Peter? When he was busily denying Christ.
Mm-hmm.
the third time, he started cussing at all these people that just insisted that he knew Jesus and had been walking with him. Peter, you know, he was an apostle and he was a great teacher. He preached the first sermon on the day of Pentecost. I think Paul may be more of a major character, in at least in Acts, and after the church was started. But Peter, to me, maybe because we know this kind of thing about him, was very human and is a real encouragement to me, because even though he did something this bad, which to me is pretty bad, I cannot stand cursing. I hate it, and it's everywhere you turn, and kids are awful, and you can't go anywhere without everybody saying all this filthy stuff. But when Peter did that, you know, once he realized, he immediately repented and mourned his lack of control and his loss of faith and that kind of thing. And he just got back on his feet and continued to do the job. He didn't just go whining away like Judas did and hang himself. Oops, I blew it. Yes, ma'am.
I'm just sitting here thinking and smiling. I wonder what curse words they used back then compared to the words people use today. I wonder, you know. I mean, I'm not, you know what some of the words they use today. I wonder, was they using those same words or what?
Well, I don't know if we have any way of knowing. I guess there's maybe some literature or historical stuff. I don't know. I don't really know. Come on, we have words. Dates bad enough.
I know.
And, you know, I'm sorry?
I think sometimes today we use words we don't even realize are bad words. Thing that we found when we were teaching the girls. There's so many things that people use today, and one that has really, there was an article in the newspaper about just the other day, it was frickin' something. And people say, just get on television and get away with it.
I know, I think they think that's milder than some other things.
Well, but they have no, but people don't really know what's in their mind and what they're saying.
When I was growing up, my grandmother, who was a Christian, a very godly woman, really had a problem with us saying stuff like gosh and golly. And when Pat and I were teaching the teenage girls, I got online and did like a big search on some of these words and their origins. And those words actually started out as kind of a substitute for, you know, God and my God and that kind of thing. So I try to be really careful about that. But there's some other stuff that's not exactly God's name, but there's other things that originated somewhere that if you really stop thinking about what you're saying, and I think it really made an impression on the girls. They were just dumbfounded. So, you know,
I hear a lot of people say geez.
Well, where do you think that
comes from? I know where it came from. How do you think? I know exactly.
Y'all, just if you don't have anything to do sometime, get online and do a search on, you know, some of the things you hear that you think might be okay. You might be surprised. I don't want to say them.
They're just awful. Wikipedia is a real good
source. Wikipedia, yes, it is.
Well, I think a good verse for not actually blaspheming, but for other words that are the not so bad words, then you have Matthew 12:36, but I say to you, and this is Christ speaking, that for every idle word men may speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment.
Yes, ma'am.
So even if it's not a curse word, even if you're using it just for an exclamatory, I would think that was an idle word because you don't have any meaning to use it.
You know, and you can go all the way back to Exodus, and one of the Ten Commandments is not to use God's name in vain. I was in a quilt shop in Galveston one time, and some women were standing around, and one of them says, well, I'm kind of a new Christian, and I'm just wondering if saying, oh my God, is using God's name in vain. And one of my friends was standing there and said, oh no, I don't think so. Well, I'm standing there with my mouth open, and as soon as I got a chance to get to that girl, I said, I think if you were to look, you know, through the Bible, I think you would find that maybe that is using God's name in vain. You know, you need to think about what you're saying. Why would you just, off the top of your head, utter, the name of our Creator and, you know, our Savior, you know, just mindlessly like that? And she said, oh, I'm so glad you said something. You know, you just never know what people are thinking. I couldn't believe she came right out with that in the middle of the quilt shop. But that is a mindless disrespect to me. Just throw that around.
You can easily say, oh, my.
Yeah, you could. And what's really bad is, you know, you didn't used to hear kids saying this, and you hear elementary school kids saying that all the time. It just turns my stomach.
Did you hear it on TV?
Yeah, you did.
I heard my 3-year-old say it.
I just got to tell you this.
Okay.
I didn't want to say anything bad. I wanted to be just like my mother. And she would even say, doggone it. And I wouldn't say doggone it. But she used the word. And I did, never knew what she was saying. Even after she died, she'd come out and all the kids would be around the tub in the farm. Peeling peaches prepared for early can or maybe preserves or whatever. And we'd all be around this tub. We had a bunch of chickens that just walked free out on the yard. And they'd hop up on the porch. And when they did, they'd mess up. And she'd come out to get whatever we were preparing to take them in and process it. And she'd see that chicken and she'd say, hey, Polonia?
Hey, Polonia?
Yeah. And I thought, that sounds so bad to me. And but my
Is
mom
it?
Never said anything.
I've
about
never
it.
Heard of that.
And you know, I never did one day. I spent a lot of time with them promoting.
Thank you,
Tony. And I do a lot of thinking. I have time to do a lot of thinking. And I was sitting there, and I'm still trying to figure out. Mom's been dead for 30 years, I guess.
Did you ever ask her what that
and
means?
I started spelling. Hey, for oh, you. That's what she was saying. Hey, for mom.
I guess that was a bad chicken.
She was passing the smell or something. Chicken. And I was so happy to find that out. Hey, go on, you. I don't think you're your chicken.
Look, maybe that was the chicken name. Maybe she had named it.
No, that's just what we're messing up the porch. Because that meant she had to stop what she was doing. Go get a pan of water and a broom.
I'm surprised she didn't make one of you do it. Let's turn to Ephesians 5.
You're
keeping your
peaches,
huh? But I was so happy to learn my mom. Come on, before we go to Ephesians 5, whoever brought up that Matthew about that idle word, that is so, although I don't curse or nothing like that, but that just made me us think. I mean, even if we use the word freaking, oh my God, or whatever else with God, those are idle words, and we need to be careful.
We're going to give account.
They don't have to be curse words to be idle either. No, there's a lot of words we say that don't mean anything
so
bad that we don't.
Gossip would be one of those things. You're just sitting around talking about somebody or something like that. Okay, Pat, will you read Ephesians 5:4, please?
And there must be no filthiness.
Okay, this version in the parallel verse in Colossians 3:8, which says, but now you yourselves are to put off all these, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language out of your mouth. What do y'all think that's talking about? Okay, I think
anything that's not encouraging.
Okay, but don't you think something that coarse and filthiness are specific? So it could be sexual, or it could just be crude or crass. Yeah.
What is your version of that?
Which verse? Turn it over. I think it's filthy talking out of your mouth.
Yeah,
filthy language out of your mouth. Abusive speech.
I mean, that's like calling somebody stupid all the time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that crudeness and crassness and coarseness, you know, probably, 50 years ago or maybe even less, when I was a kid, women did not talk like they do now. I mean, you would hear men do it, not Christians, but just men in general, occasionally, and not like they do now. It's like a stream out of everybody's mouth all the time. And now women do it, and like I said a minute ago, children do it, and I just can't understand why this isn't bothering people, because that, to me, that's filthy talk. You know, it's dirty. It dirties your mouth. You know, does anybody remember where the verse is that out of the treasure of your heart, out of whatever's in your heart is what comes out of your mouth. So if you're spewing that kind of gunk out of your mouth, what's that say about your heart? That it's not particularly
arteries
clean.
Huh? Your arteries are clogged.
Yeah, that's true. Something's clogged in there.
Ephesians 4:29 shed some light on this. It says, let all wholesome words proceeds in your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear.
Right. And along with the don't let idle words come out of your mouth that Zara mentioned a while ago.
Whether you take it abusive as what I took it as, or filthy, which I got from Ephesians, but.
Or coarse.
Yeah, but what I think of abusive, I think it's the same thing that like Elizabeth said. We can be abusive with our speech. You know, we don't have to abuse somebody by slapping around. We can talk to people in such a manner as to be very hurtful.
That's true. That's a good point.
And like kids, I hate going in the store and I hear mothers saying, "You're such a bad person." But that people get for being sad. You can tell them you've done a bad thing. It's a hard thing to say that was a bad thing to do. You're a good boy, but you've done a bad thing. And I think we can do that with one another sometimes in the way we talk to one another. We don't come out and say it, but our tone and the way we come across is you're just doing bad.
Does anybody else have, what does any other have? I have New King James. Does anybody have?
I looked it up in American Standard, but I don't remember.
Sally, what's the King James?
That's
what Pat's
got. American Standard says
Colossians 3:8. Oh. What have you got, Candace?
Colossians 3:8.
Do you have King James?
Yeah, I got it.
Okay.
Okay, I got Colossians 3:8.
Is it saying abusive or?
But now ye also put off all these: anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy communication out of your mouth.
Okay. So that's why the New King James comes from that.
The American Standard translates it. I have on here to find it. Shameful speaking.
Okay. Well, sometimes what I think is this is the only thing they can think of to say. You know, I think people, especially kids, do it to fit in. And, you know, in this country, in our day and time, when political correctness is such a big thing where we can't say anything negative about, or that's not the right word, negative is not the right word, you know, something that somebody doesn't like.
Politically incorrect.
Yeah, well, I already said that, but I was trying to describe that. Anything somebody doesn't like, it's, you know, that's politically incorrect and you're not allowed to say it. But people talk like this all the time and, you know, we can't say that's offensive because they jump all over us. You know, you can't say something to somebody. You ever try to tell somebody that that's offensive and they say, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I won't do it again." That's the reaction we get. Not anymore. I have gotten that reaction, but it was years ago. They don't react like that anymore if nobody's tried that lately. They just, grow up or something like that.
Well, if you're the least bit religious in any way.
I know. Yeah, everybody has to be politically correct. On the face of the earth. We have to be politically correct about everything else, but not if you're religious. We are fair game. All right, let's move to hypercritical judgment. What's the stellar example of this? Or who? Luke 18:11. Remember the Pharisee that's praying, you know, "Thank you, God, that I'm this
like
and that,
person.
So wonderful." Not like that guy. Yes, Pharisee and the tax collector. So what's wrong with that? Matthew 7. What are we told to do in Matthew 7:1-5?
Judge not.
Judge not how?
Lest we judge.
Yeah. Judge not the way we don't want to be judged. Because when you judge somebody for something, what do we need to do first?
Examine ourselves.
Make sure that we don't have, you know, a great big log in our eye when we're griping about that guy's little tiny speck. I think this is really hard to do. It is for me. I don't know about y'all. I think this is something I really have a big problem with because, I just probably because I'm human, I don't know why.
I think we just don't think before we say what we're saying, we're judging, and it's, you know, it just comes out of our mouth what we first say. We don't think about what.
And we don't always see ourselves as we really are. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes we have an idea of how we are with it. Other people see us differently.
I think sometimes the thing that we're most critical of others are things we don't like in ourselves. We don't want to see that. We don't want to admit that. I see a lot of people sometimes when they talk about something. It's something you know that they have the same problem as this person, but they're just
lambast
hard on this person for even thinking or acting like that. But
I'm going to read Romans 2:1 that says, "Therefore you are inexcusable, O man, whoever you are who judge. For in whatever you judge another, you condemn yourselves. For you who judge practice the same thing." And you know, it's right there in black and white, and same over there in Matthew 7. But we still miss it, don't we? We just get all carried up away in whatever we're doing, and you know, it's just real easy to see all the bad stuff about somebody else and not necessarily apply it to ourselves. Even if we're basically a pretty good person and try to live right, I think it's still easy to do that. I think it's easy to miss that, you know, we have a problem in that area too. Obviously, it's a very prevalent condition because, you know, it's mentioned several times in the New Testament. Did you want to say something? Okay. Anybody else have anything to say on that one?
What about the slave who wouldn't forgive the debt after he was forgiven his debt?
Yeah, that's a real major one. I can't even imagine anybody being so blind. You know, that was pretty bad, real bad. Especially with the consequences that ensued there where, you know, he just tossed that guy in prison with no hope of ever repaying it when he just escaped the same fate. Just unbelievable. That's a good one, Dawn. All right, we talked about slander. Okay, that's all I have on number one. Does anybody have anything else? I'm sorry that was so hard. I think when I redo this, I'll put like A, name calling, B, cursing profanity, then that'll help y'all kind of have a better idea. I'm sorry I did that. Hopefully I didn't do that in any future lessons. If I did, just let me know. All right, so who's known for their absolutely constant 40 years of grumbling and complaining? This is what it's always referring to.
Here's a line.
Yeah, I mean, this is like a no-brainer. You read that and you know they just went on and on. And even after 40 years of wandering, they continued to complain and grumble. You know, they're too hard. We can't beat them. You know, we can't do this. And then they ended up not even conquering all the peoples in the land once they got in there. I just put several examples, Exodus 15, 24, 16, 2, 73. We don't have any food. We don't have any water. We should have gone back to Egypt. We're better off in Egypt. Just on and on and on and on. Poor Moses.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to Greeks or Romans, I'm probably complaining.
So about leeks and onions?
Yeah, they said even back at least they didn't have leeks and onions.
Oh, that was their problem. I thought, what is she talking about? Okay, I missed that. They wanted leeks and onions.
Yeah, we want some
so you couldn't live without those either, is that what you're saying?
Even I'm probably complaining about
okay, I want to do just one more question, then we're going to stop because it's connected to this. How did Moses react to all this complaining and whining? Did he give up?
He cried out to the Lord.
Right. He did try to teach them that. What did you say?
He cried out to the Lord.
Yes. He prayed for them. He prayed. He defended them. You know, when they, I believe it was the golden calf when God said
that. And after they got really angry.
Oh, he did. Yeah, he threw the tablets down. Yes, he did. But he still prayed for them. You know, God was, I don't think that was when God was ready to zap them. He said, you know, don't do that because then how's it going to look to the other nations? I think that was a different occasion. I didn't write that one down. But he did have a righteous anger, I think. But he did something about it. He prayed to God, cried out to the Lord to help him. Did he give up?
No.
No, he kept on plugging, didn't he? Now, he messed up. You know, he didn't get to go in the promised land because he got a little irritated a little and didn't do what God said one time. But besides crying out to the Lord on their behalf, I did write a verse for interceded for the people. Exodus 32, I think this must be when God was ready to wipe them out. I'm sure it was more than once. This is the golden calf. And Lord, why does your wrath burn hot against your people whom you brought out of the land of Egypt with great power and with a mighty hand? The Egyptians will speak and say he brought them out to harm them, to kill them. So, you know, remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. To me, that's real impressive that Moses is able to talk to God like that. He knows God. He's a little bit different terms with God than we are. But, you know, it's like we were talking about, in the annex class, we've been talking about imprecatory prayer, or prayer, and then just when we did, we covered imprecatory, where, you know, when you got a problem, I think God wants us to talk to him about that.
Well, Abraham did the same thing.
Yes.
I do think it's interesting that we use Moses as an example, though, because
Yes, they murmured to him, but if you look a little further back with the burning bush, he gave every excuse he could think of to why he didn't want to go. Yeah. Well, I'm going to be able to do it, or, well, I can't talk properly. So he says, Aaron, I think it shows a great example of God's patience with people because, I mean, he kept giving excuse after excuse, eventually the Lord to say, go.
Right.
But it's kind of interesting that even Moses, as great a man as he was, also murdered at
and his problems. That was making me think of David being a good man, but he still had his problems, and like we were talking about a while ago, Peter. Yes.
I find it interesting. I may be wrong, but I think without exception, every time Moses confronted God with this, it was because he was concerned about how God would. I don't know that
that's
it was so
point.
Much concern out of the Israelites, you know, but he did not want God, any reason to be given for people to see God in a negative light. God promised all this to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and he didn't want people saying he wasn't a God great enough to fulfill this.
Okay.
And so sometimes I think we lose sight of things. We get so caught up in a moment, and we're concerned about us and how this is going to affect us, and you know, but we lose sight of what Moses always had in view was how is this reflecting upon my God? I think sometimes that would really help us control our tongue. And you know, I'm one of the needs this morning, anybody I know, but if we would stop and think, how is what comes out of my mouth going to reflect upon God? Do I say, God's my one?
Well, and just not worry about so much what people are going to think of us when we say something.
When we stand. In this same chapter, verse 31 says, Moses returned to the Lord after he had told the people that they had committed a great sin, that I'm going to go to the Lord, you know, for you. Oh, these people have committed a great sin and have made themselves a god of gold. Yet now, if you will forgive their sin... If you will, forgive their sin, but if not, I pray, blot me out of your book, which you have written. He was even willing to take some of the blame when he was, you know, up on the mountain with God. Mm-hmm. So we need to stop there because that's kind of a breaking point. So we'll start with number 4 next week. And I really, really appreciate all your comments and your attendance and doing the lesson and everything.
God's,
anybody?
God's answer to Moses was interesting. It was, I'll find out.
Yeah.
You've gone far enough. I'll take care of who's going to be in the book and who's not. So
good point.
I find that interesting because sometimes we want to block people out and make us.
Yeah. Yeah, God, please block them out.